Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Welcome to our first year anniversary edition of the Buckmaster Show on KVOI for Friday, June 1st, 2012. First of all, right off the top, I want to thank KVOI owners Doug and Mary Martin for making Team Buckmaster feel so welcome in our first 12 months here. And we want to thank you and all of our listeners and the sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. We are live Monday through Friday at noon to 1, and we are on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. We stream the show on buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And if you miss the program, it's usually posted by 2 o'clock in the afternoon on my website. TucsonCitizen.com has the Buckmaster Show, as does TucsonSentinel.com. Our Friday Focus interview today is with Tucson Mayor Jonathan Rothschild. Joining me to question the mayor is Mark Evans. Speaking of TucsonCitizen.com, Mark's the man there. He is the administrator at TucsonCitizen.com. If you have a question or comment, the Buckmaster Show live line is 790-2040, and we want to remind you that our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show is presented by our friends at Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Mayor Rothschild, good to see you. And Mark, good to see you.
Congratulations, Bill.
Yeah. Hey, we made it.
Yeah, 1 year. That's great. I think I was on as you were
yes,
just starting.
I think you were, yes, early on in the process. Let's begin with the story that has been in the news. Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham apologizing for inappropriate sexual comments to three female city employees during a recent economic development trip to San Diego. Councilman Cunningham admits that he had been drinking heavily at the time. In an exclusive interview yesterday with our friend Dylan Smith at TucsonSentinel.com, and later in a conversation with our KVOI colleague, talk show host John C. Scott, the councilman concedes, Mayor Rothschild, that he has a drinking problem and some personal problems, and he is vowing to get help. Well, three council members are suggesting he should resign. Mayor, are you concerned about a rush to judgment in this case?
Well, I am, Bill, and so what I have done is asked for the city attorney to review the matter. The city attorney has reviewed it, has referred it to our Office of Equal Employment Opportunity, which is like a civil rights division. We have an investigator there, and she will be doing an investigation, and I want to wait and see the results of that investigation. And actually, on June the 12th, we're going to have the city attorney present to us. What one of the things I learned in this process is that we have a city charter, and some have said that it may need some revisions in places. One place which we found is the only ability for the city council to take action for misconduct of any kind, if that occurred, is a $50 fine for disrupting a council meeting. And so we're going to take a look at what ordinances we can do and what we can do, really looking forward as to what is the proper thing. We're going to look at what other cities have done and try to get the right language.
Here's Mark Evans.
Why have a city staffer investigate a city council person? Why not farm this out to some other agency, perhaps?
And something that is interesting here is there's not been a formal complaint filed. Any one of those city staffers who were on the trip could go to the Arizona Civil Rights Division, and it would be different. What people are not fully getting, this is not all about Councilmember Cunningham. We have three city staffers who have rights, and those staffers have a right to privacy. They have a right to confidentiality. At the same time, we have to protect the city against liabilities. This particular office of Equal Opportunity does not answer to mayor and council. It answers solely to the manager and is independent.
So, who answers to the mayor and council?
Who does answer to the mayor and council, but I think we have a manager that has a certain amount of strength.
All right.
Yeah, and this was a trip sponsored by TRIO. You'll also be hearing from Joe Snell, who's head of Tucson Regional Economic Opportunities, at the June June 12th, I believe, meeting, and he's going to lay out, I guess, what exactly went on the trip.
Well, I think he's going to speak to what substantively went on the trip. And it is really unfortunate that Councilmember Cunningham's conduct overshadowed, from what I've gotten from all reports, was actually a very worthwhile trip. I was going to go on the trip, and fortunately or unfortunately, was unable to attend because my wife had a back problem. But I saw the agenda before I went, and the topics included trade between San Diego and Mexico, the biotech industry and how to develop it, and downtown development. And those are three things that San Diego has done very well. And the idea of these trips, I think this is the sixth time that Trio's taken one of these trips. They've been to Albuquerque, they've been to Huntsville, other mm-hmm. places.
Portland and Austin.
Okay. Is to try to learn from other places where they've been successful. And we're going to get a report from Mr. Snell on the 12th. I've asked our city staff who went on the trip to, you know, give us our impressions because we want to see that something good comes out of this.
Let's take a quick call from Lori. Lori has a question about TRIO since we're talking about it. You're on with Mayor Rothschild. Go ahead.
Hi, Mayor Rothschild. How many people went on this trip?
My understanding is there were 36 people. Of those people, five of them were from the city of Tucson, two were from the county, and everybody else was a private citizen. My understanding is that all the private citizens paid for their trip separately. In other words, they paid additional money out of their own pockets. I don't know how the county people went on the trip, but with regard to the city people, I believe three of them were what they call scholarshiped. In other words, TRIO went out and raised money from the private community into a general fund. We don't know who gave that money. And then the city manager took $4,000 from his budget to send his two city employees.
Here's Mark Evans again.
Is TRIO working?
I've been there 6 months. And when I got there, there was a lot of criticism about TRIO. And we've had some frank discussions with them. One of the things is the city cut back its contribution this year by, I think, $125,000. The conversation we've had with them is that just because of the nature of the restriction and the tightness on governmental money these days, that we really want them to become as privately funded as they can be. At the same time, it's important for the city and county to be at the table of your chief economic development agency. Since we've had those conversations, they have done a better job with the city. And part of that was, you know, Mark, you probably remember the history. There was a time when all this was in-house at both the city and the county. And then it was, oh, that doesn't work, so let's go put it in the private sector, let's transition it. So that transition has been ongoing, but what we found, or what I found when I got to the city, is to have an entire vacuum for economic development doesn't help. So that's why I brought on my small business advocate, that's why Mr. Miranda brought on his economic development person, and what we found is since there's actually been people at the city for TRIO to talk to, that the relationship has been better. It's hard to measure those things sometimes. We've asked this year to put certain specific parameters into the TRIO contract. So, you know, it's taxpayer money. It has to be watched very carefully. We have to make sure that it's accounted for and accountable, and we'll do that.
One of the ideas behind TRIO was that there was in 2005, GTEC wasn't working. The city had an economic development office. The county had an economic development office, or a valley. Even the tribe had one. Everybody was spending money on it. So the idea was to create TRIO, throw all the money into one pot. There'd be economies of scale there. So you can actually reduce what the cities and the counties were spending on economic development because you had TRIO there. And then TRIO would also work with all of the individual industries, the hospitality industry and the like, were also doing their own economic development. But now that you've got the city creating this new office again, you know, are you saying that it's just to be a liaison? Are we going back to the days where everyone's going to have their own economic development offices again, plus have TRIO on top of that?
Well, part of what has happened in TRIO's funds, I think at one time, and I might be off on my numbers, although it sounds like you probably have the history better, the city and the county were contributing up, I think, to $2 million.
Right.
And so now that number has been reduced substantially. So the real idea is to have the city have some economic development, because one of my surprises in coming to this office is when new businesses come to town, for some reason they want to visit the mayor, and they want and they want to find out what the city
has. They want to go to the head man.
I guess. And they want to find out what the city has available. So we need some things there.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. It's 12:15 on the one-year anniversary edition of the Buckmaster Show. Mayor Jonathan Rothschild is with us. When we come back, the 180-day plan, the mayor's 180-day plan. Tuesday is day 180. He'll give us a preview of some of the things that he feels he has accomplished during that first 180 days.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTrans, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Why should you fly at a TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry, working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for bio development. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Well, Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our one-year anniversary edition. Mayor Rothschild is with us. Mark Evans is here from TucsonCitizen.com, and we quickly go to the Buckmaster Show live line. And I think we have Tyler Vogt on the program right now. Go ahead, Tyler. You're Bill, with the mayor.
Bill, congratulations on your one-year anniversary.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Tyler, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, Mr. Mayor, I really do appreciate the fact that you really have, you know, burdened down yourself with the job of mayor, and you've done a very good job as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
The quick question that I have is, in the Tucson City Charter, under the powers of mayor and council, under Section 1, Paragraph 27, it says the mayor and council has the power to regulate and punish all obnoxious, offensive, immoral, lewd, indecent, and disorderly conduct. How do you plan on balancing that relative to sort of Paul's unique situation? I really don't want to see Paul, you know, ushered out of office for something that is unreasonable. But I would certainly like to see an invocation of, this is what our charter says. How do we make this apply in our current situation?
Okay, thanks, Tyler.
Tyler, you're going to have to send me this section. I've conferred with Mr. Rankin, and unless there's more to the section, which also talks about in front at a council meeting with a $50 fine. That's my understanding of what the charter allows for, and it's part of what we're struggling with. But on June the 12th, we will receive a full report from our city attorney as to what all our options are under the current charter and what they could be in the future.
The 180-day plan that you laid out, even before you were elected to the mayor's job, it's something you want, issues that you wanted to address, things you wanted to accomplish. On Tuesday, we hit 180 days already. Give us a preview of some of the things that are the marquee items.
Well, as you know, Bill, when I set out, I asked the community the things they were interested in, and I said, I will work on those things, and I will report it 180 days. I've been really pleased with the progress we've made. We, of course, purposely picked some things that we thought we could accomplish, but then some harder things. Some of the highlights, I think, is the community was very concerned about the land use code. We've cut 178 pages out of the land use code. We've taken several committees that used to meet separately and formed them into a unified committee so people can meet together. We're off to a strong start in that. I don't think you finish that. That's always subject to some looking at. And I want a land use code ultimately that reflects the values of the community in the sense of maybe some diversity, why the Southeast Corridor looks like the historic neighborhoods or under the same code as around the university. And I think those are things that other cities have done and we can look at. Planning and development services has been a real sore spot for people. We have now got it where
streamlining the process.
Oh, yeah. 84% of all from time of request to permit under 20 days, about half of those are from the county for wastewater and health. So ours are about 92%. But probably more important, we are now notifying everybody within 20 days of where they are in the process. And we've got it. You can get online and see your file online and actually see everything that's in the file.
I don't know if there's anything about cleaning up the medians in your 180-day
plan. We did talk about potholes, but we had to defer back to medians. And the fact of the matter is we found an extra $500,000 in the budget. We intend to have all the medians clean within 120 days. I've been getting a lot of calls from people saying, yeah, I see this. This is helping. This is what we want. And next year, in fact, at council, I think this next week, we're going to get a report on whether it makes sense to go forward on a general obligation bond for roads. We did have a victory, a partial victory up at the state legislature where we got some of the HERF money, not all of it, but some of the money redirected to cities and counties. That'll mean about an extra $3 million to us. We're going to be able to restructure some HERF money this year, and we're going to put $20 million into roads next year. Now, that's
good news.
It's good news. It's also the tip of the iceberg.
And remember, Operation Clean Sweep, which is being sponsored by our friend Phil Cedar at Green Things. And I know, Mayor, you want to learn more about that, but it is coming up on Saturday, October 20th. Everybody in the community is just being asked, clean up their neighborhood.
And it's a great, Bill, I'm glad you told me about that today. I'm going to get in touch with him. You know, the median cleanup started with AAA Landscape coming forward to the city and partnering. And these private-public partnerships are going to be so important going forward.
Mark Evans?
I'm not sure this was part of your 180-day plan, but I know you talked about it in the campaign that your career as a lawyer and in mediation you thought might be able to bring some fresh eyes to the Rio Nuevo dispute and maybe move that ball forward. Well, now mediation talks have come to an end because of the threat of another lawsuit from Rio Nuevo. So what's your assessment on that situation and what you think the end game's going to be?
Well, I worked real hard at it for 5 months. I have had mediations that weren't successful. This apparently was one. I think that unless we see a change of direction or leadership at the Rio Nuevo board level, that this matter will head to litigation. I think that's absolutely what the citizens of this community do not want to see. It's been very clear to me from day one that the citizens of the city have said, get rid of the lawsuits, do what the board's supposed to do. What the state legislature, the Republican state legislature, said in 1999 and 2009, which is work on the primary component, which is either the arena, the convention center, or a hotel. There's not really a whole lot of money there anymore just because of the economy. I say a whole lot of money. It's all, if I had it in my pocket, it would be a whole lot of money. But if they net $3 to $5 million a year, so if they did their job, it's a pretty boring committee to be on, board to be on. But it's so important to this community that we go forward to do what the legislature said. And I think when we can get to that point, I think the thing will hum, and I think we'll make some progress.
Isn't the solution really legislative? The legislature created this monster in 2009 with these political appointees. Isn't that going to take the legislature to resolve this problem?
Well,
to change the board?
Well, the president of the Senate has two appointees, the speaker of the House has two appointees, and the governor has five appointees. And so,
Many of those people have quit or resigned, and we're down to a rump board of just people who really don't like the city.
I'm sure or hope that those leaders are looking at this. I don't think they want to see a failure in Tucson. If they do, then we have to. Here's where I'm coming from on it. I want to give it another year. If we can turn this thing around in a year, that would be great. It would be great for the city of Tucson. We don't really want to lose that extra money. I mean, it is money that otherwise would go straight to the state fund and we wouldn't see it.
And approximately how much money were we talking about?
Well, at its peak,
at
its peak, it was around $20 million a year. And over the last couple years, it's been about $13 million a year, but there's debt service of about $8 million. So this year, the last report we got was that they were just at about $10 million. And so they'll probably finish around 12, 13 million.
So you don't want to see that money go away, but
no.
At some point,
at
I mean,
some
if
point,
it keeps
yeah.
going.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, given what we've done at the city council in the last 5 months, starting to get incentive programs, starting to adopt some of the things they've done in other cities around the state of Arizona, we can do a lot of this on our own. It would be nice to have that extra money, and we, you know, and by the way, Mark, one of the things that actually came out of the mediation that wasn't bad was it was the first time we actually sat across the table from each other, and there was a lot of misunderstanding, and there was a lot of going back and forth and trying to clear some things up, and I thought we were making progress until I saw another $25 million claim.
But the Rio Nuevo, this all could go away in a year, is what I'm hearing you say.
It could go away at the next state legislative session.
Streetcar sure. track is being put down. And what are you hearing from the merchants?
Well, I'm beginning to hear good things. I mean, it was hard, and it is hard on business. There's no question. And the RTA has put a lot of money into trying to have programs for the merchants to help them with their marketing, a lot of it online kind of stuff. What I've seen is that along 4th Avenue, the merchants – and 4th Avenue, you know, historically can be a tough place – they're really accepting of it. I think they can see the benefit. Along Congress, a little slower for people to accept that, probably a little tougher on their businesses, but I think we're beginning to see that too. So, you know, hopefully, you know, the idea is do it on budget, on time. They've done it so that they're doing it in blocks, so that you'll do two or three blocks at a time, 3 or 4 month disruption. Now, for complete traffic, I mean, it'll be a 13-month process, but so right now, the northern part of 4th Avenue is closed down. You know, get that done in 3 or 4 months. The southern part of 4th Avenue. You know, one of the advantages everybody on those streets is getting is they're getting new streets.
Right. Mayor Rothschild, we are out of time. Mark, you were going to ask a quick question. It's got to be a yes or no.
It's much longer than that.
Oh. Maybe.
Yeah.
You don't want to even take a chance.
How are you going to subsidize the maintenance and operation of the
real quick.
Streetcar.
Yeah, it's got to be. Five seconds.
If you go at a line-by-line item, it's going to be hard, okay? If you look at it as something that for $2 million a year, you're seeing $300 million along the line, you got to look at it that way.
Okay. Mayor Rothschild, thank you very much for being with us.
You got it.
Mark, stick around.
Thomason in Washington. A judge in Florida has revoked the bond of the man accused of killing 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. In a motion filed today, prosecutors say that George Zimmerman misled them about his finances during a bail hearing that allowed him to be released from jail on $150,000 bond. President Obama says the May jobs report shows the economy is not creating jobs as fast as we want. Republicans say it shows that the president's economic policies are failing. Russia says last week's massacre in central Syria appears to be a well-planned action by militants. The Russian Foreign Ministry statement backs the Syrian government's claim. On Wall Street, the Dow down 267 points, the Nasdaq off 74. More details at srnnews.com.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our first year anniversary edition on KVOI AM 1030, Tucson's intelligent voice. Time for our Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists who grace our stage and sound off on the week's top stories. Joining me this week on the roundtable, Jimmy Bogle. He is the editor of the award-winning Tucson Weekly, and Mark Evans is the administrator of TucsonCitizen.com. Buckmaster Show Live, line 790-2040. You can join in on our reporters' roundtable if you hear if you have a question or a comment that you would like to make. Love to hear from you. The Reporters Roundtable is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido is a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Jimmy Bogle, good to see you.
Great to be here.
And I want to personally thank you for filling in a few weeks ago in my chair, holding down the fort while we were enjoying a wonderful week in Costa Rica.
No problem. It was fun. I was honored to be here, Bill.
Is there ever a shortage of things to talk about?
Not in Arizona.
I tell you, it's just, and now with the Paul Cunningham story breaking, you heard the mayor, Jimmy, as you were driving in, and Mark here in studio with me saying he's concerned about a rush to judgment on this story.
I would agree with that. I mean, there's a lot of things we don't know, and these things will come out. The one thing that I'm a little concerned about is that there's a lot of hesitancy on the part of the city. There's some conflicting stories about whether or not a report has been filed with the city attorney. Trio all of a sudden disappeared, and Joe Snell's not going to be able to talk for 2 weeks. That's the weird thing here. But when it comes to what happened, I mean, you've got to be fair to Paul Cunningham. You've got to be fair to everyone involved. And I think certain people are jumping to conclusions. But, you know, things are coming out. I mean, Paul Cunningham today admitted he had a problem, and that's a good thing. So if he does indeed have a problem, and he says he does, he can get help for it. But we need to see how this is going to go.
Yeah, and congratulations to Dylan Smith. He got kind of the exclusive there, the first interview with Mr. Cunningham.
Right, because Paul won't talk to the Star, which I think is a something he's going to have to back off on, because the Star is the largest media in town. So, but Dylan did a good job with that story, and he's the one that kind of was answering a lot of the questions that people have, what really happened and who did what to who and so forth. I think there's a measure of holier-than-thouism that's going on here, especially with a couple of council members who are seeing political advantage in this, that they can maybe force Paul off the council and bring in someone more friendly to their side, because Paul does tend to vote often with Karen Ulick and Regina Romero and Richard Fimbres, but often he votes opposite of them. So I think there's some political gamesmanship here that's really fueling this, over and above the fact that he made a jackass of himself, you know, by drinking too much. But he's doing the right thing. He's on a public tour of contrition, and he's apologizing for it, and he's going to get some help.
Let's go back now to the Buckmaster Show live line. Lori, who was with us earlier, has another comment. Go ahead, Lori. Quickly, Lori.
Hello.
Could you give it to us real quickly?
Yeah, very quickly. Why are we funding TRIO, and why did we need 30-some people to go figure out what San Diego was doing right? When most of us go there for summer vacations, we figure it out in the first time we're over there.
Okay, thanks, Lori. Gentlemen, these trips, I think they're called officially familiarization trips, I think they're very common among economic development groups all over the country. They do these trips. The mayor was talking a little bit about there was a formal agenda. They were looking at the bioscience industry. I don't know exactly what this trip was all about. This is something we're going to learn, but whatever.
Yeah, these trips, they are fairly common, and I think it's important to note in TRIO's defense, and there are certain times that TRIO deserves to be defended and certain times they don't. In this case, you know, there was not taxpayer money for most of this, from what I understand. There was some, as the mayor discussed,
right,
with the city manager's office
there
and stuff like that.
There were some sponsorships, the
yes,
private industry.
And
was...
so most of this trip was not funded by taxpayers. The bigger question on why do we fund TRIO, that's a question that, you know, the mayor himself, he didn't come right out and say it, but he said there were some concerns that the cities had with TRIO, and they have themselves decreased the funding of TRIO. But that's a bigger question. Is TRIO doing the job that it should be?
And TRIO has been going more to a model. I think they would like it if they were completely privately funded.
Well, yes, but that's still not going to work, because a lot of the things that for economic development, you have to have government involvement. You have to have the public-private partnership. So the governments have to be involved in some way, and the governments need to have have some skin in the game, which means they need to make some sort of contribution. So what the governments are doing, the county and the city do each year, is trying to figure out, you know, how much money do we have and what's our return on our investment and are we getting something that's worthwhile? And this year the city decided to reduce its investment a little bit. And it's reduced its investment the last couple of years because it's been in some serious financial straits. But the question, larger question of do we need TRIO? Yeah, we do. We have to have a regional economic recruiter, somewhere that people who want to come and do business in the region can come and find the information that they need. Now, whether these trips that need to drag politicians and public officials along with them so they can go and have a good time in Austin and Portland and San Diego and the like, I've been rather dubious about it. Some of it is to simply to promote regionalism, to try and show our city officials, our regional officials, how other regions have come together and worked cooperatively to solve larger regional problems that have benefited the overall economy of those areas. And in that case, I would think, yeah, if you have to go and actually, you know, put your nose down in it and say, look, here's how regionalism works, then yeah, maybe there's a benefit to it.
Need to talk about CD8, and we want to talk about the CD8 race because, Jimmy Bogle, today is an important day. It is the last day to request an early ballot. And, Jimmy, you talk about record-breaking ballots coming in on this, more than half of all early ballots sent out in southern Arizona. And we're talking about a lot of early ballots have already been returned. So, and this is 2 weeks still to the election day, so it would lead us to believe that the polls may not be that busy on election day.
Exactly. It's 11 days from now, and it's possible that the race in some ways might already be decided. I mean, we don't know what's in those ballots. The numbers that are coming back, you know, everyone that I've talked to and heard from says this is close. Both sides are polling within the margin of error, we're hearing.
That's going to be a
very, very, very close race. And the number of ballots that have come back, more Republicans than Democrats, but in terms of a percentage, the Democrats have a slight advantage. Again, it's going to come down to the independents, and just like it was a year and a half ago, this is going to be a very, very close race.
My Democratic friends, Jimmy, say that Ron Barber will win by 2 points, and my Republican insiders say Jesse Kelly is up right now about 3 points. Mark Evans.
Yeah, it comes down to what Jimmy just said. It comes down to the independents and how they're going to break. One will assume that the Democrats are voting for the Democrat and the Republicans are voting for the Republican. And so who are the independents going to vote for? Where are they breaking? Now, in this district, they've tended to break toward the Republican, except for when Gabby Giffords came in, and they kind of broke for her. But we've been in these wave elections for the last 6 years where there's been these enormous swings in voters, and independents have swung the country back and forth. So it's my impression is that, you know, the independents – that's the number that really surprised me, is how many independent early ballots are coming in, because independents don't tend to be early ballot voters. They tend to be going to the polls day voters. So you know, I can't get my crystal ball out on this. I've been totally wrong about this race from the beginning. I didn't think there was going to be this kind of interest in it. I didn't think there was going to be this much money in it, because this isn't the prize. The prize is the CD2 race. But I guess this just shows you how much this race means to what people think this means to the CD2 race.
And
that they want to spend this much money on it and work this hard for it.
We're looking ahead now to the CD2 race, because filing deadline for that race and really all the state offices and federal offices was this week. So we know who is going to be on the primary and
It's looking like it's going to be a rematch. I mean, it's not for sure yet, because Martha McSally's in on the Republican side. Matt Hines is in on the Democratic side. Yeah, it really depends who wins, because if Ron Barber wins, I don't think Matt Hines in can stay in and go against an incumbent. Same thing goes for Martha McSally if Jesse Kelly wins. I think it's safe to say, even though they will deny it, that probably there's some mixed feelings on Martha McSally's side and Matt Hines' side on terms of who's going to win.
If Jesse wins, I think there's going to be a lot of Republican pressure on McSally not to make him spend money in a primary. But I think McSally could beat Jesse in this new CD2 in a Republican primary.
She did come on very strong.
On Election Day. She won the Election Day turnout. Yeah. And I think that was an example of the fact that she was a novice, didn't have a real infrastructure, election campaign infrastructure set up. And so Jesse was much better at the early balloting and getting the early vote out. And so he carried that day and he won the race. So, you know, you know, if she's a good Republican, then yeah, if a Republican wins, then maybe she bows out and doesn't challenge him. But, you know, if she wants the seat, you know, I think she's got a shot in CD2 in the Republican primary.
And if Barbara wins, it's going to be very interesting to see if someone can persuade Jesse Kelly, who would be a two-time loser in this predominantly Republican district, to get out. That'll be the very interesting thing.
Yeah, if he loses, I think he's done.
Well, who knows if he knows that in a low turnout Republican primary come in August, who knows what'll happen?
Well, the money has been flowing in, hasn't it? $3 million in the CD8 spending mostly has gone to TV ads. And for my colleagues in radio, they're not at all happy about that. Radio
and newspaper and online, too, I
really
will say, for other people in here.
And radio really being ignored, even though this particular program does not accept political advertising. My colleagues would like to have seen some of that radio money. I guess they feel that everybody watches TV, which isn't true. There's a huge audience for talk radio.
I don't know that – I mean, there's a lot of money being spent on TV ads, and we're seeing a ton of TV ads, but I also think we're seeing a huge investment in this micro-targeting wave that's come about since the 2008 election that – you had a guest on the other week where a woman who wrote a book about the micro-targeting campaigning. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, they know who's voted. They know who got the early ballots. They know who's turned them in, and they know who hasn't turned it in. And you're seeing these phone banks and phone calls being made to these people who are holding on to ballots that haven't turned them in yet. You were seeing lots and lots of mailers. And those, I think there's a lot of money being dropped in that way. And so I think they may be sacrificing their radio budgets for an increase in their budgets in this micro-targeting campaigning.
This portion of the Buckmaster Show on the Friday Roundtable brought to you by our friends at Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. Adobe House Antiques, beautiful building. It's one of those Josias Jostler design buildings at 2700 North Campbell, just north of Plaza Liquors. Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. What about this Tucson, the mediation? We heard a little bit from the mayor, Mark Evans. It just looks like impasse here with the Rio Nuevo board.
You know, the more that this board continues to talk about how they want a solution with the city of Tucson, and the more they continue to sue the city and screw up these mediation issues, and the vitriolic press releases that come out of the, you know, Jody Bain, the chairman of the board. I just think that this board's sole purpose is to stick it to Tucson. It is not to develop the Rio Nuevo Multipurpose Facilities District. And until the legislature, which created this beast, steps in and fixes this board, I don't see that this issue will ever be resolved. And I think we're going to end up in court.
I would like to disagree, but it's it's not – I mean, both sides have been kind of cranky with each other, the Rio Nuevo board especially. And Mark's right. The things that come out of Jody Bain's office in terms of the ranting news releases are pretty incredible. I mean, it does not seem like they're working to try to fix something. It seems like they're working to try to stick it to someone is really what they're trying to do.
But at the same time, Steve Kozacek, who I really like as a city councilman, doesn't help this situation, as every time he thinks that the city's been slighted by Rio Nuevo, he puts an item on the council agenda and then sticks it to Rio Nuevo.
Exactly. Like I said, it's both sides.
Right.
So it sounded like, Mark Evans, and you were here with me with the interview of the mayor, that the mayor's kind of already looking ahead here to the future without this Rio Nuevo board.
Yeah, I think what he was indicating between the lines is that some of what I just said, the leaders in the legislature might not be all that happy with the way the board's conducting itself, and maybe looking for a legislative solution here in this next session.
Should the Secretary of State Ken Bennett be involved in endorsing any elections? I would think he really should be kind of neutral on all elections, Jimmy Bogle.
Well, he's in charge of them. By the same token, he's a political animal himself. He's got an exploratory committee to be governor. He's a Republican. And that's the problem you have. I mean, you know, there's a long tradition of Secretary of State's, you know, on one hand saying I'm going to be impartial when I'm conducting these elections. But on the other hand, you've got the whole thing with Catherine Harris going back to the whole Gore-Bush debacle back in 2000. Should it be nonpartisan? Well, yes, but it's kind of like the same thing of objectivity in journalism. There is no such thing as nonpartisan.
Yeah.
So there's no such thing
as
objectivity.
We've all got opinions, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And he said today that he will not be worrying about Mr. Romney's birth certificate.
Right. So he says that the reason he looked into Obama's birth certificate is because someone asked him to. So then you had a whole bunch of people send him emails that said, okay, well, you're going to look into Romney's birth certificate. And he said, well, yeah, but there hasn't been a law enforcement complaint about the validity of the birth certificate like there is, referring to Joe Arpaio's trumped up posse investigation of Obama's certificate. And he said, well, even though he never said that, that was always in his mind back in the time. So he's walking himself back on that. He, you know, he was going to be the next governor of Arizona, and now he's taken this dive into the birther pool, and I don't know whether he's even going to be able to be the next Secretary of State of Arizona.
It might help him in the primary, though. I mean, that actually surprised me. Ken Bennett's always had a reputation as being one of the few sensible politicians up there. He'd talked to Democrats. He tried to talk to the press, whereas a lot of Republicans up there just won't even try. And it really surprised me when he waded into this because I did not see it coming. And, you know, he initially put out a press release saying, look, I'm just looking into this because someone asked. I'm not a birther. And I kind of believed him at that point. But now with, you know, this thing with Romney, I'm not sure what he's doing. The only thing I can think of is he's thinking ahead to a Republican primary.
That's going to do it for our Friday Reporters Roundtable. Jimmy Bogle, The Weekly, and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. Thank you both very much, and try to stay cool, both of you, on a very, very hot day and hot weekend. Thanks, guys.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Noble Hops Gastropub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, and that music, of course, always signals Weekend Watch with the gentleman that we have dubbed Tucson's culinary cruiser. And he has been cruising in the White Mountains. Just got a little too hot for Matt Russell. He's been cruising for a good meal and some good lodging up in Pine Top in the White Mountains. Matt, how are you?
Oh, I couldn't be better, Bill. I mean, I am in the largest continuous stand of ponderosa pines in the world up here in Pine Top, where it's, about 81 degrees right now, Bill. I'm loving it.
Are you getting any of that smoke from the New Mexico fire?
No, it's just crystal clear up here. The only smoke that we can see or even smell, Bill, is our good friends over at Eddie's Market are fire roasting some fresh green chilies today right there out on the 260 for everyone to get a gander of. So it's absolutely stunningly beautiful up here.
Well, I'm glad we're doing this, and we posted it, of course, on your Facebook page and my Facebook page, Bill Buckmaster, parentheses, Buckmaster Show. And we had some comments from listeners who are very glad we were doing this because there are a lot of people, as you know, here in Southern Arizona that are going to be heading up there this summer. Let's talk a little bit about some good eating tips.
Absolutely. There's several iconic pine top places right there on Highway 260, which is kind of that main drag that makes its way through town. You can't come up to Pine Top without getting a steak at Charlie Clark's, which is just a wonderful institution up here in Pine Top. Food and drink specials every day. I suggest the blackened prime rib, which is seared in a cast iron skillet, and they drizzle some garlic sauce around the edges. I had that a few nights ago. Absolutely delicious.
Did you? I was going to say, did you take a doggy bag home with that, or did you finish that one off?
I don't think I've ever had a doggy bag in my life.
No, I don't think you have either. You've never left a table with anything on the plate.
Absolutely. It would be criminal to do such a thing, Bill.
Yeah.
Anyway, we wanted to see about some good pizza, and some friends of ours told us to head over to the Red Devil restaurant, again, right on 260. Really some of the best pizza in the White Mountains, and I love a place that has not shied away from anchovies. Unfortunately, there are pizza places that are beginning to leave that off the topping menu. I celebrate a place that still has anchovies. I can't have a pizza without them. The Red Devil restaurant really did a great pizza.
It sounds like the highway, kind of the main drag, is it two? What did you say, two?
Yeah, it's Highway 260, kind of like the Speedway or the Broadway of Tucson.
And that's kind of where all your fine dining and your fun places to eat are located.
Absolutely. And I also want to give a shout-out to our good friends at Mountain Thai. Now, you don't have to leave Tucson to find great Thai food, but when you're up here in the White Mountains, Mountain Thai is absolutely delicious. All of your favorite classic Thai dishes. I had the shrimp pad thai ma, which was absolutely fantastic. Now, the Bon Jovi music did little to contribute to the otherwise authentic Thai experience, but we came for the food, Bill, and they delivered.
How about lodging experience up there, Matt?
Yeah, lots of great places to rent cabins for a week or even for the entire summer. We actually switched out a timeshare week that we had to use before the end of the month, and we found ourselves at a wonderful lodge resort called the Roundhouse Resort with a wonderful atrium and a wonderful rec center, pool, jacuzzi, ping pong, a racquetball, basketball, everything for the kids. I've got both my teenagers with me. Each of them brought a friend of their own. So this is the Clark Griswold experience, if you've ever seen one.
And where will the family be dining tonight?
Actually, tonight, Bill, we sadly have to make our way down the mountain to come back into the 110-plus degrees. So this is our final day in Pine Top as we bid adieu to the cool, crisp, comfortable confines of the Pine Forest and make our way back home to the Old Pueblo tonight.
And one quick question, Matt. Travel time up to the area?
Yeah, you know, we've got four bikes on the back of our family truckster, so that slows down a little bit. But you're looking at about 3.5, certainly under 4 hours to get up to Pine Top.
Matt Russell, it has been a delight having you a part of the Buckmaster Show as we hit our one-year anniversary today. You're a big part of why this program has been a success in our initial 12 months. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks so much, and a happy anniversary to all of Team Buckmaster.
Thanks a lot. Monday on the Buckmaster Show, we've actually got a great week lined up for you. Of course, we will have the Monday political face-off. We'll have Jeff Rogers here, the head of the Pima County Democratic Party. Jeff will be sitting in for one of our face-off regulars, and that is Vince Rabago. And Jeff will be up against John Munger. That will be coming up Monday on our political face-off. Also, Rick Grinnell from the Rio Nuevo Board, but we won't be really focusing so much on Rio Nuevo. Rick has put together a new business organization that he's very excited about bringing more jobs to Southern Arizona. We've been talking to Rick Grinnell about that. And Karen Ulick, Tucson City Councilman, will be joining us Monday on the Buckmaster Show. We'll get her take on the Cunningham dust-up. That's coming up Monday on Buckmaster. The Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show is made possible by our good friends at Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido is a true continuing care retirement community. You can find out more at their fine website, SplendidoTucson.com. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is generously supplied by our good friends at Culligan, offering the best drinking water and the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home and business. Why is Culligan water the best, in my opinion? Well, there's a simple answer to that. The Culligan water simply tastes better, and that is the water of the Buckmaster Show. Buckmaster Show also brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants, 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com. The Buckmaster Show, a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications. On behalf of our team Buckmaster, our producer Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, and I want to say a few words to all of you listeners. Thank you for listening over the past year. We'll be doing it again on Monday. And a big thank you to the people that make this program possible, the sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Have a great weekend. Try to stay cool.